Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Dude, that's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
All right.
This was the intro like 40 times.
Yeah, that was never a dull moment around here, Smiley, especially when we're producing things on the fly. I was having apologies for the technical difficulties, hand up right out of the gate. For some reason, I could not hear the intro, but you can hear the intro.
We heard the
intro. Everyone heard the intro.
It was ESPN Ocho came in live for about 40 intros.
I just want to make sure everyone's very pumped up and excited. You heard the theme music. You heard Smiley telling you. You heard Smiley shooting 61. You heard Smiley telling you this is a Smiley show. Just hammering all that home.
We were one intro away from me hopping off and just trying another day. I had enough of that intro.
Well, we're thoroughly introduced. So this is, as you heard 4 to 5 times, this is the Smiley Show. And this is our full recap of the 124th U.S. Open, where we were all last week from the pool deck. This is a much less interesting backdrop. Smiley's back home in Birmingham. I am listening to the smooth sounds of movers downstairs pack up my house so I can move tonight and tomorrow, which is lots of fun. But right now, we're here to break down, golly, Smiley, I mean, one of the more thrilling finishes to a golf tournament. And I don't think I'm being a prisoner of the moment here. I really think that's one of the best finishes I've seen in a long, long time. And let's just start big picture on just the emotions and just the feelings of that day in so many different directions, the highs for Bryce and the lows for Rory, and just what it was like witnessing that entire thing play out right in front of your eyes.
Yeah, it was a tough scene. It was a real tough scene. And I apologize for the audio. We're also having audio issues with my mic, so bear with us again. We'll get that sorted through. But, I'm just reflecting on the day. I think at the ninth hole is when I felt like this thing was going to get juicy. Like, it was going to be juicy. You know, when Rory is sitting there on the ninth green and has this 10-footer for birdie, and really, you know, at the fifth hole is like a classic Pinehurst. We can kind of get into like fair or unfair type of debate later. But the ninth hole is when, you know, Bryson hits it over the green at 8. And then it's the first time that like they kind of looked at each other and trying to figure out who was going to go first. And Rory got in quick putted him. Like, he didn't give him the opportunity to chip first to like have a roar. And Rory gets up there and drains the putt. And I was like, okay, that was sick. Because now, like, Bryson's got to be able to respond to it and hits an incredible chip shot. So that kind of set up the afternoon and the rest of the back nine for what I consider to be, like, one of the coolest experiences I've ever been a part of.
Yeah, this is something you noted, very good job of noting on the broadcast, you know, just that match play sort of feel. It's something you noted and discussed on Pardon My Take. She joined last night, and that episode dropped this morning to break down. It was a really fun interview. Listen to that this morning. You're just running through the whole tournament with those guys who were clearly thrilled by the outcome as well. And PFT asked a question that it kind of struck me as something I hadn't really thought about with regard to Rory and just watching every shot. And I wonder if just you had any additional reflections on that of like, do you think that hurt him at all, where you know, the goal obviously is to go out and play your game and, you know, and shoot a low number. But at the same time, you know, you got to make sure you're going low enough to win the U.S. Open. And so I understand why Rory is paying attention to what Bryson's doing and making sure that he is taking advantage of all the opportunities he has to move it to a number where he can win the tournament. But do you think in any way, shape or form, him paying attention to what Bryson was doing, you kind of got in his head a little too much and maybe had something to do with those two misses down the stretch?
I think it helped him more than it hurt him. Okay. The only time I think it may have hurt him was on 16. The three putt on 16 is inexcusable. That was a really, really bad three putt and just a lapse of concentration. Rory doesn't three putt from there if you give him 500 golf balls. I really believe that he would never three putt with 500 more balls. That's how like simple it really was. The only thing I can think of on the putt, which looked to be a poor stroke, was that maybe he was kind of like running numbers in his head, thinking, like doing some math and just like wasn't focused on the putt. Next thing you know, he just kind of quick stroked it and hit a poor putt. And once he missed that, I was like, what are we witnessing? Because just bogeying 15 and bogeying 16, I'm like, man, 17 ain't going to be an easy par. And who knows what's going to happen on 18. But let me just kind of go through a little bit more of that back nine and the extent of just kind of what I saw. The 10th hole was sick when Rory made that 25-footer and then Patrick made it right on top, which, by the way, Patrick Cantlay was – he was like the tick that would not go away.
Yes.
And he was just – hanging around, and it caught me sometimes, and I have to probably be a little bit better in the future to keep up the energy with somebody who I didn't think was going to win the golf tournament. I was more, you know, when I had a chance to come in, I was just trying to tell the story of Rory and Bryson and just what I was witnessing as far as just how Rory was handling kind of the chess match between the two. And sometimes when Cantlay was over it, I would kind of have to, you know, update you on the Rory part of it. So I kind of did feel like I probably could have done a little better job with Cantlay stuff, but he waddles a lot, by the way. Big waddler.
Interesting. A waddle guy. Yeah. He does have sort of that plodding walk to him.
No, it's the, like when he's putting, it's like the,
oh yeah, 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 yeah. The foot shuffle, the little, yeah. There is definitely some penguin action going on over those putts.
No, Bryson's a waddler when he walks. It's like, yeah, from it looks like the Cookie Monster walking down the fairway when you, like from 300 yards away.
We got the Rory bounce, we got the Bryson waddle walk, and we have the Patrick Cantlay waddle putting
shuffle.
The shuffle, the little foot shuffle. Yeah, I thought Cantlay to me was exactly what we said the last couple of days where. He needed to go out and just play steady golf and just, you know, not try to do anything too crazy in any sort of direction. And you said on the show on Saturday night, you're like, if he goes out and shoots one under or two under, he has a chance to win the golf tournament. Well, he ends up shooting an even par 70. One would have got him tied for second with Rory and two would have gotten him into a playoff with Bryson DeChambeau. So it was out there for the taking and he makes bogey at 16 and kind of that more or less rules him out of it, but he just kind of stuck around the entire time. We got some comments here that we got to get to that are great. First and foremost,
Before we get there, kind of sure. run you through the back nine to give us an opportunity to,
yeah,
let's settle this thing. I want to get to the 13th hole.
Oh man.
Because that to me is like being on the grounds for that was sick. I kind of wish they would have made a little bit more of a difficult hole location there just to make it a little bit more drama. But we had an amazing TV because we had Rory playing, you know, off the backstop of the grandstands, ricocheting all the way back, getting up and down. And once, because in my ears, I can hear Bryson making bogey at 12. So I'm like, holy crap, he's going to win a major championship. Like, it's going to happen. And then Rory's over his tee shot at 14, over the ball, like about to hit. And I had known that Bryson had hit, and I heard Bones say it's on a good line, it's a fairway metal. It's like, that's going to be really good then.
Yes.
And I watched it land. I was like, oh boy. And Brett, he was about to take it away, backs off, and I'm like, oh boy, all right, here we go, let's go. And then hits that duck hook at 14 and gets a lucky break, as then leaves in a good spot, makes par. But 15 is where I felt like it was the first mistake he made all day.
And Rory, you're talking about Rory, yeah. Pulling that 7-iron instead of that 8-iron.
Let me get my book real quick, because I want to run through the numbers.
Okay. Well, while Smiley's going to run through the numbers, I'll tap dance here for a little bit while you look at his esteemed trophy case behind him. On Smiley, on 13, as you pull that book up, would you have liked to seen Saturday's pin on Sunday?
I think it was good for a Saturday. I think Sunday was, yeah. I just would have maybe like tucked it in the corner a little bit more. Because it was 305 yards to the front of the green, 316 middle, which was like a perfect tweener for Rory, perfect three wood for Bryson. But I wanted to look at 15. So 15's number was, as you can see, it was 187 front, 205 to the hole. And it was hot, and it was down off the right. And when I got the signal that Rory was hitting 7-iron, I was like, that's the wrong club. It's an 8-iron. And I was thinking that maybe he's just going to hit some type of high, soft cut 7-iron. And you got to factor in at least an extra 7 yards you can get out of something when you're in a moment like that. And it's hot and it's downwind. All we needed to carry it was 192 yards. And I really felt like he could hit an 8-iron 180. And that's all it was with the heat, the downwind, adrenaline. 8-iron was enough club. And guess where 8-iron wasn't getting you?
Off
over
the
green and into the native area. So I think that was a poor club choice at 15. And then we had lack of concentration at 16. Inexcusable three putt. Great up and down at 17. And then 18, crummy lie. Not a good lie at all. Mm-hmm. And I felt like there was a chance that he could have done something with it. But it was a 50-50 one, whether he can get it onto the green or not. And he just, you know, it was weird how it came out, too. I thought it was going to, like, stumble into that bunker and have a similar shot that Bryson had.
Mm-hmm.
Gets up near the green. And it was an easy pitch shot. Easy, easy pitch shot. And that's his only other mistake, I felt like, all day, was the pitch shot. I felt like he should have been playing for par. And it was really, really simple to keep it short of that hole. That was your only goal, was keep it short of the hole there.
As Bryson did, right?
Well, I don't think Bryson was trying to keep it short. I think Bryson's just like, let me just get it onto the green. So I think that was a huge mistake. And even like from me reading it from behind the green, I saw a putt that like was inside left. And now if he would have hit it inside left, he could have made it, but he probably would have had 20 feet coming back based on the read of seeing it. So for those of you that are watching on TV, that read was terrible. I probably would have missed it low as well. That was definitely a learning experience, and not even probably just laying out next time and just, because we kind of had some dead air. I was like, wow, the putt's just going a little to the right. I would play left center, and I probably shouldn't have given an exact spot because it doesn't matter. I should have just said going right. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. But a tricky putt, and I'll reference to that, because I asked Justin after the round. I was like, hey, what did the putt do? He's like, well, he aimed it left and pushed it. It's debatable on where you needed to start it to make it. But I guess he had told me that Max hit the same putt in the practice round. It said it was a really goofy putt, that it was a type of putt that if you started it well outside the hole, that it just hung there.
Mm.
And so I thought that was really interesting, that it was a difficult read. And we talked about this all week. Mm-hmm. The guys that were making putts had uphill looks. Not many guys were making downhill sliders left to right or right to left. So blame the chip shot. And let's get into the comments. I just wanted to kind of get into just.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think just a couple of different reflections on some stuff you said there is that 15 was so. I know we just talked about a bad pitch shot that Rory hit, but he had pitched it so well all week long. That's something we talked about numerous days, and so that's why 15 was confusing to me. What was just that we had a situation where if you leave it short. That pin was kind of front-ish right. Like, you can have an easy little pitch up there and can get up and down like you've been doing all week long.
We saw, 15?
Yeah, 15 for Rory.
It's not easy up and down, but it's...
Nothing was, but yeah. But better than being off the back, right?
He would have had something inside of 10 feet for par not playing for bogey. And I just felt like he makes par there. I think he cruises.
I think he cruises too.
And I think it was a bad club.
Well, it's just, and that one was, that's before we get to the two tough missed putts. 16 was, you just referenced it there. I mean, 16 was like kind of above the hole, kind of like on the side of the hole. Definitely wasn't an uphill putt. 18 was above the hole. And it's just two tough spots to leave yourself with those putts that are just, there's all those subtleties and small moves with the grain on those greens and the speed which they're rolling. And those are the ones that are uncomfy. It's, the little inside four footers that slide just a little bit. So you can't necessarily hit it inside the hole. You're trying to pick a spot and match it to pace. And that's how you miss those,
It was a tricky read. It looked like he wasn't comfortable where, how far he had it out left. I was watching from the side and I noticed I noticed he hit up on it and it looked like he just did not want to pull it left. And from the side angle, it looked like a push to me. And I don't think you can blame the putt on 18 because it wasn't an easy putt. I think plenty of guys would have missed it, but the chip shot, I would have said if you'd put a lot of guys there on the chip shot, a majority of them would have left it short in that scenario, which would have been the much, much easier putt.
Yeah. Yeah. So a couple of comments, few items in the chat I'd love to get to. First, we got to shout out AV. AV's in here. Commenting is a little hard out. Good to see you, buddy. We have someone, Gazzer99. Charlie clearly struggled with the intro as much as Rory and three footers down the stretch. Tough
the
scene for me.
Was a tough scene, man.
Sick burn, but fair. There are two kind of questions we have. One from Walker McNeil asking about where does Bryson rank among major championships since 2010? And he's saying amongst his friends, some of his buddies are saying Bryson is greater than Brooks, as we said here today. I think that's insane. Brooks has won 5 majors. I don't think you can put Bryson in his 2 U.S. Opens above Brooks. But just wondering where... With this second U.S. Open win, with this second major for Bryson, where does he kind of sit among the major winners of, let's say, the past 10 years in your mind, amongst his contemporaries in terms of legacy?
It's a tough question to answer, right?
Yeah.
He's – look at the U.S. Open in Wingfoot he won. He won by 6 and dominated, right? And there was times this week in which he dominated. Let's say he had his driver that he was hitting all week. He could have dominated yesterday. We don't know. The reason why it was close is because he was not hitting fairways. And really, only on 18 and 12 and 8, too, had situations where he finally was put in spots where the U.S. Open was going to get you. But I think Pinehurst number 2, the big debate, which is, I think, a conversation worth having is whether it was fair or unfair. Did it penalize people that were maybe hitting good shots too much and maybe not penalizing players that were not hitting good shots enough? And I think that to me is something worth talking about because I think some players got away with murder on some shots where Rory at number 5 didn't miss hit a shot, walked away with a 6.
Yeah, I mean, I the course discussion, I think, is an interesting one to me because you see a lot of complaints, or maybe not complaints, but just saying, hey, I would have liked for there to be more wire grass or more of a, I think the general sentiment being, I don't want guys to be able to hit it in those sort of native areas and be able to hit a clean shot out. And my retort to that would be a couple things. One, I love the randomness of it, the variability of it. I mean, every time Bryson hit a ball over there on Sunday, there was this amazing moment of drama for like a couple seconds where you're just watching that ball plinko through all the grass and where's it going to end up? Where's it going to end up? And then it stops and you're trying to get a read on the line. Is he going to be able to play it out of there? And that was all week long with a lot of players, but especially the drama on Sunday. I found that to be interesting. And I think the second thing there is that, and maybe there could be a discussion about green firmness and just, you know, they continued to water these greens throughout the week because they didn't want it to have a situation where they got out of hand and players complained. But I felt like to execute a shot out of that area, you know, maybe you get a good line, you can get a clean, you know, kind of you can strike it clean and have a chance, but you still have to hold greens that were difficult for everyone to hold the entire week long. So it wasn't like this foregone conclusion. You still had to hit a really good shot out of there to give yourself a chance to make a, you know, a par or a birdie or whatever else. So I didn't find it to be like, I think the course was plenty penal. And I think, you know, there were eight guys that finished under par, you know, and the winning score is minus six. Like, to me, I didn't feel like, wow, I really could have used a little ramped up test. Like I feel like they nailed it in terms of the setup, and the only, you know, maybe minor gripe you could say is like, I wish the greens were a little firmer on Sunday, but that's about it, I think.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you there. I just kind of think about the fifth hole, you know. I think that just keeps coming to mind to me with Patrick Cantlay hit a seven wood kind of right at the flag, which was never going to stay up if it wasn't enough club. Where Rory like played it out to the right. He played the safe shot at the right side of the green. And I felt like an idiot because a lot of times down the fairway, I give guys like thumbs up, like good shot. I don't look back. I just kind of throw my hand up when I think it's good. And I thought it was like deep enough in the green, far enough right to do that. And then that ball starts going. I'm like, ah, shit. So I felt like Cantlay took a worse line and hit a worse shot, even though it was a good shot, a worse shot than Rory. He ends up in the bunker with a great situation to get up and down for birdie. And Rory ends up in a situation where he's just scraping to try to find a way to make par. Mm-hmm. So that to me is like, I wasn't in love with the way the fifth hole like shook out yesterday, but.
Can I jump in there and say old Ben has given us a $5 tip and commented on the fifth hole. He said, I'm sorry, but Rory's second shot on five was perfect and was not rewarded. Don't talk to me about luck in that situation. That was the course not rewarding. I think that's the first tip we've received on YouTube. So, old Ben, thank you. But wait, I also wanted to...
you can get tips on here?
I guess so. We're all learning this live, but I felt this is the right place to both make that note as you're discussing that hole and also say... Thanks, old Ben. We appreciate you. We'll buy ourselves like a coffee or half a beer or something like that. No, anyway, continue.
I'll buy old Ben a beer down the road.
There we go.
We don't want your monies. We don't want your monies.
I mean, but and just to continue on five, you know, is that I understand where people are coming from saying, hey, that's a little, you know, unfair. It's a tough bounce. But I felt like that was kind of. That's kind of how it goes in a US Open from time to time. I mean, we saw guys get some good bounces, guys get some good, bad bounces. I think it's tough when you keep, you know, it feels like Bryson got so many good bounces, you know, but then he came down to 18 and he, you know, was in a tough spot and he, you know, he tried to get relief. I was curious what was going to happen there. Got denied relief and had to go execute a shot, you know, to put himself in that front bunker and then had to go execute another shot to win the US Open. So I understand fans of Rory saying, five felt unfair, but I don't think the US Open is always fair. You know, that's just how it goes sometimes.
It's just a conversation I wanted to have.
And, yeah.
I think to Bryson, you know, I've touched a little bit on Rory. And first off, I can't imagine how Rory feels because I was so deflated in the car, like leaving. It didn't even, it felt wrong. It's like I just witnessed something that I wasn't supposed to see. And not only did I see it, the world saw it. And I just wanted to just pat him on the back, give him a hug, and be like, dude, I'm so sorry. You know, because he had played so well. And I said this on PMT last night, that people are going to remember the putts that he missed. They're not going to remember all the putts that he made. And he made so many. He made so many big putts. And that was the thing that held him back last year in majors when I'm watching him just trying to get momentum in majors and he's hitting the right shots and he's has these opportunities to get himself, you know, really in the thick of it, in the hunt. and just would miss it majority of the times, and made the big putt at 14, then hits the wrong club at 15, and then just has a brain lapse at 16. I'm like, oh my God, is it going to happen? And then Bryson hits a bad drive at 18. I'm like, he's going to luck into a playoff. He's going to have a chance. And then, of course, Bryson hits it in that bunker. And I want to give you just like my bird's eye view. I walked up into the bunker, like I'm on the right side of the bunker, 15 yards away from him. And as he walked in, I noticed how much sand was in that bunker. Mm. It just looked like there was more sand than other bunkers. And I'd heard that they had put more sand in some of the bunkers out there, and especially ones that hadn't been hit out of, you would think that there would be more sand, like that one. I guarantee that bunker probably got 10, maybe 10 people playing out of it all week. And I was thinking, all right, where's the playoff holes? Because I didn't know what the playoff holes were. Because I knew I was going to be with Rory. I just didn't know where I was going. So I'm kind of like walking around in circles trying to figure out where am I going? And then he gets up there, and I'm sure you saw my tweet thinking it saw that I would hit that 55-yard bunker shot over the clubhouse and into the pool.
And Bryson, right where we recorded our journals the last 3 days.
And Bryson, dude, he took such a lash at it, man. Like the nerve that you have to have, and to be able to quiet your mind, to be able to execute in a situation like that, tells you what type of guts that Bryson DeChambeau has. And we'll remember Rory's misses, but luckily in a situation like this, at least somebody went and won this thing. It wasn't a situation where Rory's on 18 green, misses a 3-footer, and Bryson wins in the scoring tent. No. He had an opportunity to make par, missed the putt. Bryson won the golf tournament. So I think that's what makes this U.S. Open fun to talk about. It was fun to watch. It wasn't, we're going to remember Rory's misses. I'm going to remember the Rory makes and misses, where everybody won't. But I think it's much more of a credit to Bryson just absolutely getting up there and just playing with just stones, man.
I want to do a full unpack on Bryson, all things Bryson. There's a comment from Sean McCormick I want to get to in a little bit here. But I just, you know, briefly want to touch on some of the things you just referenced as it relates to Rory. It is amazing to me, going back and looking at the stats for the fourth round, that despite those two horrific short misses, he still finishes eighth in strokes gained putting on the day, which to your point is an indication of how good he putted up until those last two misses. And it really is tough to, you know, this is the outcome for him, but that definitely gets lost to history, as you've said. And then in the immediate aftermath of that, there's a question here, Sean Leach. What are your guys' take on Rory immediately leaving and already taking off on his jet by the time Bryson held the trophy? Obviously, heartbreak for Rory, but still, we saw the video of Rory peeling out of the parking lot, you know, clearly frustrated. This is a tough one, and I think your perspective on this is going to be very unique. And you know, I'm curious to hear your take on this. But it's, of course, he's now had a near miss at the 2022 Open Championship at St. Andrews, one that he wanted to win dearly. Had a near miss last year at LACC with Wyndham Clark. Has this near miss, and probably the most gut-wrenching of them all, because he had it right there in his hands with two short made putts. He wins this tournament. Your position as someone who has both played at the highest professional level and also experienced, you know, a gut-wrenching Sunday at a major championship, but also now as someone who is a member of the media who's covering these things, what is your take on Rory sort of leaving early without speaking to the media and peeling out in that sort of way? Because for me, it's like I totally can understand those emotions while also saying, it's kind of the deal. It's part of the deal is to, on the back end, no matter how frustrated you are, you know, you can choose to not do it, but there are going to be reactions to that that are going to not be favorable for you or your brand, or however you want to look at that.
I was fine with it. I mean, it's unfortunate that his car just happened to be in the media parking lot or wherever he was, to where he has cameras on him. And the last thing he wanted in that situation was probably to be around anybody. I just try to put myself in those shoes. I probably would have. I'm not Rory McIlroy. I don't claim to be. I don't know what it's like to have a 3-footer on 16 and a 4-footer on 18. I don't know what that feels like. I know what it feels like on the front nine. I don't know what it feels like on the back nine. But I just think that I had this note. It was 3,598 days since his last major that he had won. It's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
35 majors in between. I think he's in his own right to leave. I don't like, what is he going to say? Congrats, Bryson. Who knows if he doesn't like Bryson, like, what is he going to sit up there and just lie and just be like, congrats, Bryson. Like, good job. Like, what is he supposed to say? He's not going to give you any answer worth a shit. So like, in my opinion, why are we talking about this? It's the only reason we're talking about it is because we have a video of him peeling out of the parking lot.
Yeah. I mean, to that point, having been there and in and out of that area all week long, because it was the entry point to get into the pool to set up for our recap journals, it could not have been a worse place for him to have to a park, because there was a separate sort of courtesy car parking area that, you know, I'm not going to pretend to understand the intimate details of how they get all these cars in here, but there was like a line of cars.
I kind of want your breakdown on the car logistics.
There's a little bit of that, because there was literally the line. There had been maybe 10, 15, maybe 20 parking spaces that were the closest to the clubhouse at Pinehurst. And they were all for past U.S. Open champions. Rory, of course, won a congressional, right? So those parking spaces are sitting right there, and it bleeds right into the media, the flash area, where all the media congregated every single day to get quick quotes. And then you walked up a set of stairs into the main media availability room, where, you know, it was in a tent, air conditioned, you know, guys sat at the podium and took questions, you know, the thing you're accustomed to seeing from, you know, post-round interviews for all these guys. So it just so happened that where Rory had to park was right there where everyone was rushing to head to get ready to interview Bryson and, you know, supposedly Rory right after the round. And so he leaves with about, you know, 50 media members all with their phones out ready to record the entire thing and post on the internet. And that's exactly what happened.
I would be keeping receipts if I was Rory. Like, if you had your phone out and you were taking videos of me right there at the end, I would be like, I'd be so upset. But I think Gary makes a good point in the comments. He said a handshake before bouncing, mm-hmm. which is probably the right balance and no media needed. And it just makes me think of a hard fought game seven where, you know, in the NBA finals, wherever it is, like the guys eventually come together and, you know, it's just good sportsmanship. And I think that's probably, you know, whether he wanted to or not, that was the right thing to do. But no media, didn't need to do media. That to me is not even a debate. I don't see what are we going to get answered? It's like, Rory, what were you thinking about that putt on 16? He's like, I don't know. I need to make it. You know, what did you think about the putt on 18? Broke more than I thought. Well, SK thought that same thing. I didn't see it that much break.
Well, this to me is actually, it's a funny bookend to the week that started with Brooks Koepka just bouncing on Thursday and doing a text interview with Eamon Lynch, because he's like, what am I going to answer in terms of a question that is, you know, that like, what am I going to get that's new or different or that adds insider value? It's like, I'm going to go home. It's Father's Day week. I'm going to hang out with my son. I'm going to hang out with my wife, and I'm going to go get ready to watch a Florida Panthers Stanley Cup game. And that's a lot better use of my time than talking to the media. And I think that what Rory suffers from here is a little bit of the people who are complaining are the ones with the largest megaphones and the largest followings and the ones that are like, how dare he not stay and sit in front of us and answer our questions? And I'm so far from a Rory McIlroy in terms of like sporting accomplishments or anything, but losing sucks, dude. Competing and losing sucks 100% of the time. And to do it in that fashion, like, I am not a chipper friendly human being in the wake of something like that at a much more microscopic level. So I can understand the way he felt. And I think he's a victim a little bit here of just of that. And just, you know, this is, It's just his whole track record the last couple of months and everything. He's been in the news for a number of different items that are high profile, and people are kind of ready to jump on him and pile on him. So, you know, sure, he could have handled it differently. But how much differently do you want a guy to handle it in the wake of a crushing loss? And that's all people want to talk about, too, with these things is when's he going to win another major? When's he going to win another major? So anyway,
where does this event compare to you for watching it on TV like you were, to seeing what happened on 16 and 18, to the Chambers Bay U.S. Open with DJ three putting? Was it more or less? The DJ thing happened so fast that it was over before we knew it. It was like, holy shit, Jordan just won the U.S. Open. Where it felt like it was just this elongated kind of similar type of wow factor as that, but we just had to get to, we got to watch it for a longer period of time, I guess.
Well, I think it's funny because it's such different times in my life, right? Like I'm trying to think of what I was doing for the Chambers Bay U.S. Open, probably with a bunch of buddies, middle of the summer, you know, drinking beers, hanging out, completely different setting. Whereas yesterday I was back home for Father's Day. I'm sitting in a living room with, you know, my wife, my son, my parents, and my two dogs. And it was, you know, a completely different feel, but it was, again, I can be prisoner of the moment, but it was like, it was electric and I was going crazy and my son was running around and clapping his hands and he was all excited because we were excited. And so I think it, you know, that's not a great answer to your question, but it's just more of a reflection on the way you feel in a moment. And I think the difference being that even though Rory lost this in the same way that DJ lost this, it still took Bryson hitting that last sort of shot and stamping it. We thought there was going to be a playoff there, right? We thought there was no way he was going to get it up and down out of that bunker. And I think that was the best possible way for it to end. Instead of, you know, Rory did give it away, but Bryson had to go out and do something to make sure that he got a hand on that trophy. Which, and I think that was nice.
Like, where does it rank of all-time majors as far as just – As far as just like the theater,
dude, like I'm trying not to be prisoner of the moment. I can't think of one.
I just think it was that damn good. Just the being there in person and just the back and forth, the entire back nine for them waiting on each other to hit. They would wait, like Rory watched every single shot that he hit on the back nine and then he would hit. It was just this chess game back and forth, which made it so much fun on TV because you know you weren't missing anything live because they were waiting. Like, nothing was on tape. Everything was live, which doesn't happen. Like, this never happens because a lot of times when two groups are playing in different time, like, they're playing shots at the same time. But that back nine, everybody was playing in sequence. It was awesome.
Some of the comments, Barry is talking about Tiger in 2019 at the Masters, and that's a great, great point for a very different reason, you know, where you have the same feeling of, I cannot move from this television. Like, I must sit here and I can't do anything else but, you know, take this in. That was different because that was like a legacy thing of like, are we going to see Tiger do it again? I don't think the drama of the specific tournament was the same as yesterday.
Yeah.
Like it was cool for sure. I'm not taking anything away from that win, but yesterday was just pure. Like, I mean, and it helps that it was two big superstars on rival tours and things like that. But plug any of the top 20 into Bryson's seat and into Rory's seat, and you're having the exact same, or maybe not the exact same, but a very similar reaction to how it went down. Of like, whoa, this was thrilling. You know, we have John Glenn Bensfield here. Stayed up till 1 a.m. to watch it here in Europe. Couldn't turn it off. Like, it's you know, it was canvas television.
The only thing about the Tigers winning 19, which is a total, you can make an argument that that's up there or better than, you know, just Tigers return to glory, if you will, as Jim Nantz had an epic call on. Like, every single player getting to 12 and hitting into the water, that's similar type of crazy drama where Tiger then hits it on the green. You're like, okay, that's why he's the GOAT. But also, just to add to 19 of why it doesn't have that same feeling to me, and I think it starts with the weather. They had to play threesomes early that morning and they're off split tees. It was a weird day for an Augusta Sunday. It's not the sunshine with twosomes. It was threesomes. It was just a different type of
year's
experience that I don't think doesn't take away from how good the drama was. It just was different.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, completely fair. And it's, I, you know, it, it's, it, it was for me, if you're talking about storylines, that was a legacy play for Tiger. Amazing. But it wasn't like, you know, you go back and I mean, you rewatch Tiger's highlights, but you wouldn't go back and be like, man, I can't wait to rewatch the tournament itself because it was so interesting.
Well, we talk about the Country Club Ryder Cup, like amazing moment with Justin Leonard winning on 17. I'm just thinking of the all-time great golf moments. That, like, where did yesterday stack up? That bunker shot is going to be remembered as a top
right
shot in history.
Because yeah, I mean,
it's a top in my pea brain head right now that's totally biased of the moment. It's a top five shot in history, right?
Well, yeah. Well,
Am I way off?
Let's pull some recent memory shots. Like for me, I was standing 10 yards from Matt Fitzpatrick when he hit that 9-iron out of the bunker at the Country Club.
Better than that shot.
Really?
It's better than that shot.
That's incredible. Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, you have a better feel on a degree. As we kind of go into this with Bryson too, like, we can't not mention the fact that Johnson Wagner is just a gift. He's a gift to the golf world. And the fact that he's out there under the cover of darkness, recreating multiple shots, went back and tried to hit Bryson's shot, you know, where his drive was on 18, and you talk, you know, trying to get the right angle, and hits his first shot off the green. And then Bryson bombs the set, talks him through the shot, and he hits it to a foot. It's like, are we ever going to get any content better than that?
It was awesome, man.
I love Johnson so much. And I love the fact that we got that moment.
It was amazing. Like Johnson with the US Open trophy right after.
Yes.
All right, hold on. All right. So the Wester Rossi Ninja. So that's a lot of recency bias involved in calling it a top five moment in golf history. LOL. What? I'm prisoner of the moment. I'm always been a prisoner of the moment type of guy.
Same.
But give me some examples of where I'm missing. Like, where am I? I think just from a level of difficulty, the shot was very hard. It was a 9 or a 10 out of 10 as far as difficulty goes. Throw in the moment. Throw in what the situation was, time and score. Dude, he just made a half-court shot is the way I see it.
Westerosi Ninja or anybody else, I encourage you, please. Okay, here's the first example. He says, Larry Mize holing out at Augusta was better. That's a top five shot all time for me, for sure. And I think...
Luckily, we have five shots in
yeah, there's five of them.
That might be one. That's one bullet in a hole.
There you go. I mean, I think give us, you know, three additional ones or four additional ones if you want to kick Bryson out.
Get the chat involved here.
Yeah, please.
Let's the chat chime in on some all-time great shots to see exactly how far off base we are right now.
Yeah.
Right now, I don't remember anything. My golf history brain has just gone to kaput. I can't even think of anything.
Well, I think it's okay to be prisoner of the moment today. We can continue to reflect on this and add, you know, take shots in and out. But I mean, for me, Jordan's shot from the range in 2017.
That's a moment. That's not a shot. And he mishit a 3-iron. Like, let's...
You're allowed to say that. I can't.
he hit the 3-iron and looked at it. And he said, "Oh, he actually got lucky that he picked the wrong line because he thought he hit a terrible shot."
Heel says Tiger has to have five shots better himself. I mean, I think that's, you know, probably fair. I just think, you know, situation moment. Tiger's Nike logo chip 16 at the Masters. Yeah, for sure. I mean,
yep, that's top five shot of all time.
Top five shot. It's you know, listen, we'll continue to unpack this, but and we'll keep reading your comments. But
definitely not Morikawa driving the green in Harding Park. Definitely not.
There's a comment earlier that I wanted to get back to from Sean McCormick to kind of turn the conversation back to Bryson, where Sean asks, is Bryson considered a needle mover now? Does his win yesterday hurt PGA Tour viewership out, you know, from here on out?
That's a good question.
You know, it's interesting, right?
It's a really good question because what we heard last week that something's going to be announced tomorrow, and we're not here to even get into a deep discussion on this. This is why we have the Smiley Show week to week, to where we can talk about those things ad nauseum. But this is, we're just going to keep reacting to Bryson and his win. But yeah, dude, he's, I mean, from being there on the grounds, the chants that I kept hearing, like the USA chants for Bryson, the constant him just pumping up the crowd, even on 18, I'm on the putting green and I look over and I guess Matthew Pavon got booed for not finishing out.
Yes. And did you see him turn?
And then he looked and he's, and who in that moment does that? I just was like, this guy's insane. Like I've never seen somebody be just so comfortable in their own skin to just not even worry about the moment and just like getting himself out of the groove. And he did it earlier in the week on 13, where he wanted to drive it up on the green and he ends up laying it up in the bunker, but he told the crowd, it's like, hey, don't boo me, don't boo me, don't boo me. I just, nobody does that.
Well, and there was another one too, on the heartfelt side, and I forget which green he was walking off of, but there was a fan in a wheelchair with some sort of physical impairment that was thrilled to see Bryson, and he stops in the middle of leading a U.S. Open to sign the kid's hat and give him a little high five. And I just felt like that, the moment with Pavon on the green, of having this awareness, this ability to switch focus between trying to win your second major at an incredibly demanding and exacting venue where most guys would just have the blinders on, but also having this sort of being able to look around and take in the moment. And he kind of spoke to this in his acceptance speech, you know, that post-round press conference on the green there as he's being awarded the trophy, where he's like, I want all of you to be able to share in the celebration and touch this trophy because you all were part of this entire week. And there's a lot that's been said about, is this genuine? You know, we know the way Bryson was before. We're trying to figure out whether this, for me, I love the fact that we give people room to change. And all week long, we've seen this sort of tidal wave of support coming around for Bryson. And what we saw from him and his interaction with the crowd was really special this week. We should not take that for granted. And having him around for things like this is just, it makes watching golf so, so, so much better. And that's where I stand on this. It's like, I mean, the guy's driving around in a golf cart under dark and photo, you know, crashing, Johnson Wagner, the bunker. Like, the guys don't do this after they win majors. It's the best.
I'm just, first off, AV's killing me in the chat right now. He just said, how many Game of Thrones accounts on there? Yeah. And it's totally keeps throwing off my train of thought here. Golly, are we going to talk about it, by the way? Are we going to talk about two things that we need to talk about?
Hit me with it. What are we talking about?
Well, first off, we need to talk about that you picked Bryson this week, and that your FedEx Cup points are ineligible because he's not a PGA.
Oh, no. I'm getting those FedEx Cup points. What do I get, 700 for that or 750?
750. So we just keep picking winners. And then the second thing we're going to talk about here is that Matt now is 2 weeks in a row that Happy Hour has had a winner. Akshay in San Antonio, Bryson at the U.S. Open. So if you see a guest come on the Happy Hour at any future event or the next event that we have it, take them. They're winning.
You are putting together quite the impressive reel. You know, the little sizzle that you send around to guys, you can just shoot to them in a text. Hey, you want to come on Happy Hour? You'll probably win. You know, check out these guys. It is our seventh one-and-done winner pick. And I say of the year, but it's really not the full year because we just started for the Mexico Open. I mean, we're entering. And by the way, 2 weeks ago, when I entered my pick of Adam Scott in a tournament he wasn't playing in, I was like, this is rock bottom. And it was, because we're so back now. I've gone Colin second place last week. Bryson winner this week. The heater is back on.
Oh, you want the good news?
Hit me with it.
I'm starting to see the board.
You're starting to see the board?
Like, I'm seeing the future. Like, it's lining up in my head. You know, like, how you're, like, on a run right now? I see something happening for me in the next couple of weeks.
Like, for your one-and-done, like, your one-and-done board charting out. Yes, oh, okay.
Like, it's all laid out. Like, I see the future of who's winning.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing about it. I mean, do you want to tease any of you like winning, or do you want to wait and just make your picks? You know, maybe we should just tell people, hey, tune in and tail the picks, because at this rate, you're making money. You're making a lot of money.
Yeah. You're making monies. You're making the monies.
I mean, I just think, you know, to kind of go back to where we started on this, it's like, it just, beginning of the week, it just felt like, man, this place sets up so nice for him. And the that bore itself out. Sure, he got lucky with some of those lies in the native areas, but the ones he still had to hit shots out of there, and he hit them very well. And the thing that surprised me really was the one hesitancy I had around picking him was, is he going to go out and try to overpower this golf course the way he usually does at a lot of places? And he did not.
Who were you going to pick before, like, you got on Bryson?
Well, my layout of the three guys I liked that were in the, so I came into the week and I was like, obviously Scotty, we all love Scotty all the time. And then I liked Colin and Xander, but I'd used both of them already. And then and Ludvig as well. And I'd already used Ludvig. So really what it kind of boiled down to, I was choosing between Bryson and Victor. And I'm glad I went Bryson instead of Victor. I mean, it's we talked about Victor on Friday night. It's like he comes back with that. I think he was like third in strokes gained approach that day. And he's like, it's tough right now for him to string multiple back-to-back good rounds together. But when he does, he's going to be so back.
Yeah, totally. I kind of played it really nice in our clip that we had after you picked Bryson. It's kind of like this fail-safe right now to say, you know what, if you didn't pick Bryson, I would have picked Bryson. So it's like I get like my little second place trophy for picking Bryson. It's like kind of, it's a good way to, we've been really good about mentioning about eight guys in our one and done. Cause if one of them hits, we're like, oh, we were on them, but we just couldn't pick them. We just could not pick them.
We couldn't, we would have loved to. And then we bring on guests who like filled up the long shot roles for us. You know, like we had the dude perfect guys, the Masters picking Jason Day. We're like, that's insane. But if he wins, we have that on tape.
yeah. Same with Fat Perez picking Thigala at the PGA. We're like,
yes,
that's a, like, we like dark horse guys. Cause that nobody's talking about Thigala to win this week. So that was love that from Fat Perez.
On the topic of some of those names we just mentioned, golly, I found it so odd the way Ludvig, I don't want to say he folded, but just it felt like the moment kind of got to him on the weekend a little bit. And that's the last guy that I would expect that to happen to. I mean, I know some of that stuff was like 13. It was a tough pin placement. You make one mistake and all of a sudden you're going to compound, you know, a million times over. And that kind of takes him out of it. But I just felt like there were opportunities missed throughout the weekend. And I guess for a guy that seems so composed at a young age, I think I saw someone or heard someone mention this on the broadcast where he always plays at a good pace, right? Like he's a fast player, which is good. But just, I think the question was posed as to whether it would be worth slowing things down a little bit in a high pressure spot in a major, just because it can get to you and your mind can start racing a little bit and you can start speeding up a little too much. What are you laughing about now? the Game of Thrones guys.
The Lannisters always repay their debts. Dude, the Game of Thrones. By the way, I'm excited to watch House of Dragons. I didn't get to watch it last night. Love that series. I'm pumped to watch it tonight. So that we just need to have like a 15-minute. We need to have this King of the North guy and AV and have them just talk about Game of Thrones for 15 minutes on one of our episodes.
Don't forget the Westerosi ninja.
Yes.
He's also chiming in too. There's a lot of Game of Thrones action happening in the comments.
Sorry,
which
what did you just like, what was your thought?
Well, and Forrest Holt just commented this as well with regard to Ludvig. Like, does he play a little bit too fast in a major?
No, I think he's fine, man. He's making birdies, which is what you want to see. Because what it comes down to in major championships is you're going to make some bogeys. You can't make doubles, but you need to have enough offense to be able to counteract a couple of those bogeys. He's going to be a player that's going to be able to make four or five birdies at a U.S. Open setup, and that qualifies you to be able to win majors, which is why Ludvig has gotten to such a good start in major championships. I think who we haven't mentioned yet today, who we need to, and let's go back to the 13th hole on Saturday. Tony Finau lost his tournament by 2 shots and makes a triple on the 13th hole. I know he kind of backdoored his way into shooting. Well, he shot 300 on Saturday. I guess you wouldn't call it a backdoor because the field came back to him. But that's a good week for Tony Finau. A really, really good week. I think for somebody that rightfully so has de-elevated his game at the major championships, similar to Patrick Cantlay, let's take our hats off, the hatless tip, to Cantlay and Tony Finau for bringing their stuff this week, because that's what they that's the type of game that they do have. So it was really, you know, from a future U.S. President's Cup team or Ryder Cup team, it's good to see those guys showing up and playing some damn good golf. And Finau, he is more than qualified and talented enough to win a major championship. More than qualified. And I would be very surprised and shocked if he did not win one because of how good of an iron player he is. And all it takes is his putter to get figured out, which that claw grip, for a guy that's got that low hands, got the claw, I mean, it doesn't look good, but it's better than where he started the year, which is that quick little yippy stroke.
I mean, he's another guy that, you know, I know this is putting trends. Boy, his last 2 years been about putting trends. We had the jailbird trend. We had the lab broomstick trend. You know, now the hottest thing is this spider that Scotty went to. You know, I mean, I know he's putted with that ping blade for a long time. I'd love to see him try maybe something a little bit different.
Tony?
Yeah.
Well, I think he had a good week with the putter. I'll check the stats real quick, but he had to have, right?
Well, let's pull him up right now. He was 32nd in strokes gained putting this week.
Heck so yeah. That's a win, buddy. That's a win. That's
better than where he's been for sure.
We take that all day long. That's a really good week. And third in approach for the he's third in approach on Tony Finau, first in approach with his irons. Shocker.
Yeah.
He is unbelievable with his irons.
So here's a question from Johnny C. He says, we keep talking about the game that works best at a U.S. Open. So how or why is their game not also good for the other majors? And I'd say, Johnny, I'll quickly chime in here, but I think Smiley's best suited to answer this question. But when I've been talking about Ludwig this week and why his game is so suited to U.S. Open, it's because the typical U.S. Open setup is, you know, narrow fairways, and you get penalized for missing fairways, and the greens are firm and fast. And the reason why we both love Ludwig is he hits the ball long off the tee. He hits the ball straight off the tee, so he hits a lot of fairways. I think, and he hits the ball really high with those irons. So when you're hitting approach shots into greens that are firm and fast, he has a better chance of holding those greens than a player who is, you know, hitting a shot from further away and hitting at a lower trajectory. That bore itself out through the first two rounds, where I think he'd hit 93% of his fairways and 83% of his greens in regulation. That's why I like Ludwig at a U.S. Open. Now, I like Ludwig a lot of other places, too. I just felt like this was super suited to his game. So I'll now hand it off to you, Smiley. I mean, just is there – it's interesting. Like, I think the two places – or the three sort of – I'm going to leave the PGA Championship out right now. And just maybe try to describe the difference between the game that suits playing at Augusta National, the game that suits playing at a traditional U.S. Open test, and the type of game that suits playing a links-style test you see at the Open Championship.
So I'm going to start with where I believe you've got to be to win majors. You've got to have length. You've got to have length. It starts there because why? Greens and major championships are firm. So you have to have a higher landing angle coming into greens. So you first off, you need shorter clubs in. You need to be able to hit it higher. And if you're somebody that doesn't hit it far, well, you need to be able to hit it higher with your irons into the green to have spin and a higher landing angle. Dispersion with a 9 iron versus a 6 iron. I don't know exactly how many yards it is, but it's a bigger, wider dispersion pattern. And when we talk about all the top players in the game, all of them are long. All of them can hit it high. And I think that's the recipe that you have to have for majors, which is why you never really see outliers win major championships. For the most part, in the today's day and age of golf, you got to have the length. You got to have the length. I mean, go back to 1999 and when Payne Stewart won the U.S. Open. Do you want to know what Bryson and Rory's driving distance was going into the Sunday round? They were averaging 339 yards off the tee. Payne Stewart in 1999 averaged 255 yards off the tee. This is 25 years ago. Just gives you an idea of how much the game has changed. You know, Payne was hitting less than 60% of his greens and at 255 yards off the tee, it's not even comparable golf in 99 to where it is now. And that it's a totally different conversation, but why major championships in this day and age, you have to have length. You have to have shorter clubs in your hand to be able to stop it on firmer greens. Because if you don't, you got to be damn good to be able to, you know, the Chris DeMarco of the guy that used to challenge Tiger Woods, not long, but he was able to knock down a flag stick. David Toms, not long, but he can knock down a flag stick. Players that are coming out now aren't playing the type of golf that David Toms and Chris DeMarco played. They're hitting, they're bigger athletes. They hit it longer. They're trained to hit it long. Which is what these players see when they watch on TV in college, right? Charlie, I mean, this is what they see. Like, they realize how important distance is, because guess what? These dudes that can hit it really long, like Bryson and Rory, they can chip and putt too.
Yeah. And I think there's a whole separate spinoff discussion to be had there about length in the game. And, you know, there's a touch of irony this week where you're at a USGA championship where they're talking about making these changes to the golf ball, but not the driver. And, you know, and the stat you just laid out shows just how far we've come, you know, with that equipment in 25 years or so. So it's I think that's part of that discussion of, you know, do we need to make changes to something more than the ball or not change the ball and change the CCs on a driver head and stuff like that. I don't know if it's worth fully getting into that today. I think there are a lot of other places that are having that discussion at a more informed level, perhaps, than we are. But what I do know is this, is that the equipment we have and the rules we have are the rules we have, right? So what you're not going to go like penalize yourself for the sake of, you know, the honor of the game, right? Like if you're Bryson, you go out and you get yourself a crank long drive driver head and you go out and you get your bulge face irons to limit your dispersion on your irons and you go take advantage of what you can do. And that helps you go win a major. And I think that, you know, to your point, it's like across every level, it's, you know, you got guys who can't afford to fall behind in the distance game because of the test that's required at all these major championships. Mm-hmm. And that's maybe, you know, I hope that to a certain degree answers the question that was posed in the chat, but you know, that's kind of how, you know, I think, you know, we both think about what you need to win a major. So
yeah, totally. It's definitely, there's a group of players that it feels like outside of those guys, it's like, how are you going to do it? And it was actually a good point that the Westerosi ninja, he said Harming was an outlier last year, which is a good point. That was a golf course that there was some fescue out there, but Harman had an incredible putting week and just was ball striking it really well. So Troon will be interesting this year. From playing there back in 16, it's a Harman could win there, but the back nine is epic. The back nine's so dang good. The front nine's not that hard.
I love this comment from Barry. Give me a 975D and a set of 990s. Barry, you just put me in a time capsule. And
I don't even know what that means. Is that like old clubs?
That's a classic Titleist driver my gosh.
That used to be the best.
It's probably the club that I can picture the most vividly in my head without looking at it. Like that little kind of, you know, teardrop shape head with the little triangle aiming, you know, feature on it. God, that was such a sick driver.
Sure.
So thank you for that, Barry. I think we're nearing the end here, and I'm wondering if there are other topics you want to cover. Do you want a one and done point standings update? Would you like to have that?
Yeah.
Because
you just got so many points. I'm probably 1,200 behind you now.
So I got 750 this week. You got 57.5. I'm at 3,343 and change. You're at 2,448. Let me tell you the good news, Smiley, is that, again, if we were players, Scotty, of course, would still be first by a wide margin. I would be second. Xander would be third. You would be fourth. And Rory would be fifth. So we got that going for us. I'm thinking for travelers for a number of reasons. One, I haven't looked at the field list, I'll be honest. And two, this whole week is going to be insanity, and I don't know that I'm ready to make a pick right now. I think we should do an on the run travelers picks that we post to social media. I'll just hop on my phone at some point while I'm roaming around my new house, maybe give you a short interior tour.
Are we not doing we're doing our picks for our Wednesday episode.
Yeah, which I think we might have a fun guest on the Wednesday episode. Yeah, I'm very excited about that guest. But yes, we can tag that on there as well.
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's do that. Okay, so then that's your standings update for one and done.
Unless you just want to do it now. We can just do it now, too, if you want.
I'm not ready to do it now. I'd like to build a little suspense, build a little anticipation. I'd like to still bask in the glow of my Bryson DeChambeau win, my fourth win of the season.
I could do an exacta for the Travelers.
Look at you, horse racing guy. We'll throw back to the PGA Championship in Louisville.
I would have just checked my pockets thinking I had like 12 horse tickets in my pockets. I had seven, the three, the five, and the one. And
just take them outside, just tear them up because none of them are good.
There's no sweeter feeling than handing all my tickets to a Louisville friend and be like, did I win or lose? And they're like, lose, lose, lose. Okay, we're robbing. We just robbed this place. We robbed this place. Lose, lose, hand the tickets to the register, and they said, you won $42. I'm like, that's not robbing the place. Actually, I lost money on the ticket.
We got Johnny C saying, better box that, Smiley. Sick horse racing term, Johnny. Really, really love that.
Oh, we got Graham, by the way.
We got Graham. Congrats to Graham and Taylor for getting engaged. Saw that on Instagram yesterday. Love to hear it. That's one of our good buddies. Out of Big Spring in Louisville. Appreciate you watching and congrats.
I owe him so many drinks.
So many drinks. I actually feel bad. Like, Graham, please tell us what we owe you in the comments, and then we'll see if we can get old Ben to tip us that amount so we can settle our debts. Oh man. So what anything final to kind of wrap up? I mean, we covered a lot of Bryson, a lot of Rory, you know, hit some kind of names, Tony Finau, Ludvig Åberg, talked a little Cantlay, talked about the course. I mean, I feel like that's a pretty comprehensive review. Anything else worth talking about as we kind of play this into Travelers Week?
Yeah, the U.S. Open at Pinehurst number 2 was badass. That was so tight. I'm going to remember that forever. And, man, I want to just take myself back and just – I wish it would have ended differently, but I'll never forget what my eyes saw.
Yeah, this to me, I'm so proud of this. I know I'm not like a Pinehurst resident, but as a Durham, North Carolina resident, as a guy who went to the flagship North Carolina State School, I'm so proud of this one for the state of North Carolina. And I know sometimes there's a little grief given for anchor sites, but when you have a U.S. Open like this and you know it's guaranteed to come back, you know, in future years, that's sick. Like I cannot wait to see the next U.S. Open played at Pinehurst number 2 the way this one played. And honestly, it gave me much more of an appreciation of the course, you know, from before. I always liked it, but just seeing the way it played this week, I'm like, man, this is so awesome. I love this. I can't wait to see another one. And we have Oakmont next year, which will be a different type of test, but you know, another one that should hold a lot of entertainment value.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's been a fun week. Looking forward to the rest of the year. We got a lot of stuff in the burner. Shout out to Jackson. I'm sure he's on listening. He's been crushing it. So hopefully y'all enjoy the upgrade in some of our socials, and we're excited to keep on pumping stuff out.
Yeah, Jackson, heck of a job this week, buddy. Crushing the content. Saw him in the comments earlier. So appreciate you joining us here. And that's about all we got. So here's what we're going to do now is I'm going to play the outro 5 to 7 times. And then at a certain point, this is going to cut off. But I'd like for you all to stay and hear the outro music because it's going to happen a lot. So
if you weren't here for the intro, he played it about 7 times because he said he couldn't hear it. But everybody else heard it. And it was a tough scene.
Let's pull back the curtain. I had my mic plugged in, or I had my headphones plugged into my mic because earlier we're trying to troubleshoot some tech stuff, and then I was playing it and I had to switch. You guys don't care. It's just,
yeah.
Well, we'll be better next time. The important part.
I want to be able to use my mic, but apparently, like, my stuff doesn't work for Restream, so we'll get that sorted out so it doesn't sound like I'm talking through a walkie-talkie.
Yes, we'll figure that out. Sound quality is surprisingly not terrible, but we'll get better. We're always striving to get better, and we appreciate you guys joining along for the ride. And all the comments, we had a robust chat section today. I love seeing that. It was fun to kind of have.
Winter's coming. The Game of Thrones in this chat just absolutely destroyed me.
Oh, I love it so much.
AV needs to be our full-time moderator on the chat just to get people going.
Yes, we need that. AV, of course, thanks for joining, buddy. Always good seeing you. That's all for us. We appreciate you watching and listening, and we'll be back here with an interview we're excited about on Wednesday, and then a recap of the Travelers after the weekend. So we will talk to you then.
Can you just play that outro?
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.